Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
Come on, John. Can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
Welcome, family. Welcome to yet another edition of Making a Connection. You know, I feel so good every time I say that because it's another day that I get to count a blessing to be here among you. It's been a trying time over the periods of time that we've had this show. We've been on the air for better than a decade, and that's a blessing. Yeah. All by itself. And here we are into the fourth month. That's better than a quarter, whereas June would make a half of year into yet another year. And you guys are still here with us. So I'm proud. Forgive me if I'm counting too much for you here today, but I'm in the mood to count all of the blessings that I have because I'm constantly being granted more and more each day. Hopefully that's the same thing happening for you as well. As we come to share some more knowledge, which is always a blessing to be able to know more, or as our beloved teacher would say, bringing you to the moment of understanding. And the more you can understand about life, the better you're going to feel about it. And that's just my personal view. I think there's so many frustrated people right around here because they think they got the truth all in a bottle and they're ready to sell it. But it's not to be sold. It's only to be shared. And so I thank you for being here with me and my partner who's always with me, Hanshi Salim al-Rashid. So please help me welcome him to the show.
And I thank you.
Heart to heart, good brother, heart to heart. We're doing this thing, as you once put up there, all things martial art. We bring this show to you in the name of Supreme Grandmaster Dr. Moses Powell. And as we said, all things in martial art. We always got something to talk about, but it really comes from you. You give us the input, and we talk about it, and we come to a higher understanding on it. So I gladly accept this. Please gladly accept this invitation to come be a part of our conversation each and every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. What's been going on with you, Hanshi? You know, I see our listeners are checking in one at a time, and I appreciate them coming here to warm up their feet, so to speak. But what's been on your calendar?
Oh, brother, you know, I've been going back in time, reviewing some of our shows and editing some of our shows. And at some points my mouth fell open, man, at who we had and who said what and the guests
yes,
we had and the interviews. I'm like, wow. You know?
No doubt.
So, you know, I'm appreciative. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. You know, out of the mouths of the warriors themselves, many warriors have blessed us to be able to come on the show and share in the topics. Many of them even return back or just stop in every now and then. You know, you always have that invitation as well. So we thank you if you're here with us today. Our topic today is a little bit, not so much controversy, but I really want to sit back and hear what you got to say. And our number is 646-716-6825. If you dial that number and just press the number 1, we'll get you in the queue and, you know, get you up to speed as to what we're talking about in the conversation, and your contribution always makes it better for us. And we came up with this
one, sir.
When we asked the question, we say, how much attention, if any, should you pay to teaching how to respond in a self-defense situation to getting hit? I know that's kind of a mouthful there, but, you know, we asked again, how much attention should you pay, if any, to teaching how to respond in a self-defense situation when you get hit? That's loaded there, Hanshi, because, you know, I didn't say if you get hit. I said when you get hit. And a lot of the instructors, again, I'm going to keep it open, and I'm going to try to jump right in here, but I put my 2 cents in here too much, but just want to sort of, I can just leverage this out. Pro and con, your opinion is always appreciated here. But a lot of teachers, and you know how I feel about condemning anybody for their actions, Hanshi, but I just wanted to share some of the teachers that I have seen. I'm going to use the term ukitori for those people who are not familiar with that. Uki meaning the person that's accepting the technique and the demonstration, and Tori being the person that's doing the technique. But some schools don't ever teach the other person to be the Tori. You know, they're teaching you this is what you can do to somebody, but they never teach you if you get hit, what should be your response. Are you feeling me on this one, Hanshi?
Yes. Yes.
And so this is why we're asking the question, how much attention, if any, because some people say, I don't pay no attention to that. I'm teaching people how to fight, defend themselves, survive, do whatever. I don't expect you to ever get hit. And it's not something you want to implant in a student's mind that some would say, I'm not trying to give them any doubt so it can grow, that this is not going to work. But you notice I paused the question to say, in a self-defense situation. I didn't say in a contest. I didn't say where you can tap out. I didn't say where you can, there's a third man in the ring. And even in the sweet art, the sweet science of boxing, the best have gotten hit and hit hard, devastatingly.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't teach you in boxing not to never get hit. You come in the door, as soon as you jump in the ring, they're hitting you. So, but the response, you got to give a boxer the credit for the response of him being able to understand, I'm going to get hit, but I'm going to hit back, and I'm going to hit more accurately. But as I said before, some schools teach students, I ain't teaching that. I'm teaching you, this is what you can do. This is what you can do. But set that up for me, Hanshi, and we let you in the back office to let our guests in. I see they're lining up back there. Again, just press the number 1-646-716-6825. But talk to me, Hanshi. What do you got?
Yeah, the first thing came to my mind, we discussed this, okay, you know, and I'm walking around and I'm saying, life is real. And I was in the company of a heavyweight champ, and, you know, we're in the gym, and the guy got popped and kept running. And what he said to the guy made a lot of sense. He said, hey, man, you can't fry fish with cold grease, you know. And it settled on me because, it's like, I'm going to teach you how to swim. Read this book. because you're going to get tapped. It may not be. It may not be. And this is real, man. You know, you may get tapped. You may get snuck, as we say in the street. You may get snuck. You know what I mean? You may miscalculate your distance and get popped. What you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. I don't advocate killing your uki in on the mat in clinical training. What I'm saying is, your uki has to know what it feels like to be manipulated, taken to the ground, and put some pressure on them. Check.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to leave it there because I'm collecting notes and see if I can get into everybody's comment in a minute here. But I just want to sort of clear up a little bit because there is a difference between punishing an uki to demonstrate a technique and a uki responding. Mm-hmm. That's kind of not what I'm talking about. And I want to make it clear also that I'm not talking about instructors that just stand there popping a student in the face to show you what it feels like to get hit in the face so you can just go, I can take it. Because I've been seeing videos like that as of late as well. Like, what? You know, they've got the students standing there taking gut punches to prove that they can take it. That's not what I'm talking about neither. I'm just saying, should your hands go up? I mean, maybe you might suggest that. You know, in a real situation, if you get popped, your hands should go up. You know, if you're in a situation, you should change your angle. If you get in a situation like in what I call a turtle shell, where you're just, you know, covering up, waiting for the onslaught to stop. What are you teaching about getting hit in a self-defense situation? 646-716-6825. Let's see what we got in the back office to start us out. I don't want to hold nobody too long on this one. Just get their input, and I appreciate it if y'all just help me out on this one, man, because I'm wondering what are people saying?
Yes, sir. This is Professor James Sims.
Aye, my brother. Always answers the call. I appreciate you.
My God, us.
Yes, sir.
Good question.
Did you get a chance to hear our subject matter?
Yes, I did. I had texted you to let you know I couldn't stay on long, so I'm glad
I got
called on real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I teach and I talk about a lot of times the hardest punch you'll ever get hit with is the one that you don't see.
Yes, sir.
Mm.
And I'm going to just deal with the way we're taught in Sanuka. Doctors always taught us, get off first or you can get off last.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get hit. However, you want to make sure that what you teach, see, Doc always says we don't teach counters, but we have counters. You want to make sure that what you teach, the strikes that you teach, aren't the strikes that you get caught with. For example, if I take your sight, you can't fight. So I don't want to get hit directly in the eye. I don't want to get hit in the esophagus. I don't want to get hit in the area that can numb me for a few seconds that gives my opponent the opportunity to finish me. I have to, in boxing, as you mentioned, you're going to get hit, but in boxing, we learn to roll with the punch. When we see it coming, we roll with it. And sometimes we want to take that hit so we can get that counter off that they can't deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to teach that. But I am not one who says, like, I hear this a lot in knife defense, you're going to get cut. I don't teach people, hey, you're going to get cut. I teach you how to deal with a knife and how to survive. Yes, you're going to get hit, but you have to make sure that you don't get hit on the chin, which takes your equilibrium. You want to make sure you don't get hit in the eye where you can't see, definitely in the gristle of your nose, which could cause you to hemorrhage, and you definitely don't want to get hit in the throat where it stops your breathing. So the way you keep your hands up will help you deal with when you do get hit, because if your hands are up, they have to go over, under, or around in order to strike whatever the target is. So if you keep your hand up, when you do get hit, it won't be a full impact. But you have to understand that sometimes you want to take that hit, because if Soki Hassan is close enough to put his hand on my shoulder, I'm close enough to put my hand on him.
Yes,
because
sir.
He has a reach advantage. So therefore, I may welcome his shot just so I can get mine off. And basically, that's all I have to say. I know this is going to get deeper because Hassan's going to throw his trick questions in there, but I may not be around to contribute. But I know it's going to be deep.
Man, I love and appreciate you, brother. But go on about that. I'll see you next week. That's the great Professor James Sims. He's going to be out at our event of Family of Sanukas on April 27th. So you can come out there and get educated and get blessed and get touched. Thank you so much, my brother, for checking in. I know you're busy.
Thank you.
But I appreciate you. Thank you. I tell you, that brother, he's going to talk about some trick questions. But I got to appreciate him for all that. He's always dropping those jewels and moving on through here. I think it's important that we do understand and sort of marinate and digest what he said there because he hit it from every angle. And he was strong about his opinion on what he does not teach as well or what he won't say. What he holds an objection to. And I myself have used that expression before about knife fighting, and I guess it can weigh both ways. But what I do not not teach is that you will not get hit. And, again, there's ways of saying that, and there's ways of being able to understand that. But this unexpected, it seems that in some self-defense situations, it seems to shock people when they are, you know, attempting the technique and they had to abort it or it got changed in some kind of way other than the way they was taught it. So, in other words, as an example, I'm teaching you a choke technique, how to get somebody's hands off you, but you went for the choke technique and the guy took one of the hands off your neck and popped you straight across your face. Just slapped the crap out of you or cold cocked you and then went back to choking you. It's like, well, wait a minute. You're supposed to keep both your hands over here so that I can do this and I can do that. And after I do this and you do that. But when the expression I use in my school is animate, if I tell my student, you know, well, we do it in the laboratory form as well. But when I say animate to the uki, I'm telling him to start it out that way and do whatever the hell you want to do after he initiates, which means that as soon as you put your hand up to defend, to hit back or to block or to strike or to kick or whatever, I'm telling the uki to try to do what he feels is natural to defer that. Now, two things usually happen here, which is really not, you know, you have to kind of work this into your dojo training. Is one, you heard me when I told the uki to do that. So you automatically then forgot the technique, and you busy on working on what the Tori is going to do to you. But that wasn't the intent of that. The intent of that was to make you go at trying to do the situation, and then when you get popped, what is your body reaction and learning what your body is telling you to do and not to stop doing what you were designed to do, which is survive. And I think that all too often it's just people that become very disillusioned at what they've been taught because, hey, you didn't put the hit part back in there. You know, you didn't hit back when we were practicing. And then, yeah, I got hit. Yeah, a slap or a punch across my jaw. It does hurt. What do I do? And before I see, let you go to the back of us to see who else wants to join us, I'm reminded of the Mike Tyson fight, where many of us will remember the one and only time that I can remember. He's been knocked down before, but I think anybody that knows Mike Tyson's fights will re-envision this one, the time when he got the mouthpiece knocked out of his mouth, and he was looking for it on the floor to put it back in his mouth so he can continue fighting. Well, again, in the gym and in the sparring partner has, you know, put something on Mike to make him understand that, like I think at the end of the interview he said, all I know is I wasn't supposed to be on the floor. So instinct got him back on his feet and looking for his mouthpiece. He said that he did not remember doing that. And I was very impressed with that because in the martial art we call that muscle memory and secondary involuntary reaction, which means my muscles know what to do to get my behind back on my feet, but I'm not really conscious of that. So you can be unconscious and conscious at the same time. You can be doing things by remote control. And we've seen our body, we've seen some fights that are sometimes comical that's on the internet where a boxer is knocked out, but he's still punching from the ground. He's acting like he's punching. I've seen boxers get hit so hard until they start boxing the referee like he's the opponent. They don't see the guy no more. All they know is somebody's in front of them, and they're on automatic. So, again, the question is, what do you do? What do you do to do when they get hit? And the reason why I say in the self-defense technique, because now it really counts. It really counts to know what to do if you ever get tagged. You know, one thing about being close to going unconscious, sometimes, not all the time, sometimes is this twilight moment. You get caught, get hit real quick and real hard. Boom! It's a void there, a real like no sound, no nothing, and you want to go to sleep. The one thing I'm gonna tell you is that you must tell yourself, snap out of it, because you will go to sleep, aka knocked out. So if you get a chance to have that thought in between there, note that you should be slapping yourself out of it. I'm just going to say that. I hope you never come close to being that kind of stunned. But the only thing that's going to save you is being conscious of it and knowing to tell yourself to snap out of it. And you can do that. It's very, very possible. So I wanted to say that because most people have never been dazed. Come close to it. And it doesn't have to be a punch. It could be a severe slap on the side of your jaw, on your jawbone. There's seven nerves there that go from the edge of your jaw to your chin. And if I fire them off like a firecracker, you're going to go out. Okay? Mm-hmm. But again, sometimes you can feel yourself going out. You understand what I'm saying, Hanshi?
Yes, sir.
So I think it's worth a conversation. 646-716-6825. Who else we got there in the back office? Want to join in?
It's Brother Shah.
Brother Shah, all the way from California. All right, brother.
Heart to heart, Jim. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam. Oh, man, glad you was able to check in, man. I know you do a lot of one-on-one self-defense thing. You're training some people in executive security. You got some things going there where I know that you are friends with a couple of boxers, famous boxers as well, as Jab Zuda. Just talk to me. I know you know the conversation here. Talk to me. Should we be teaching self-defense, in self-defense, what to do when you get hit?
Self-defense. I believe, yes, sir, I believe we should be teaching what to do in self-defense, in combat in general, because everybody is a willing participant. I think that's one of the things that we should always teach people in any type of fight, when you're teaching self-defense, combat, training, just in general, like you were saying about boxing, that everybody that you fight is a willing participant. So, what you said earlier, I agree, we shouldn't be, you know, beating up on people or saying, hey, let me show you this move, and then you shouldn't hurt them. But okitori definitely should be a part of, or sparring, some people may call it, definitely should be a part of the daily training, just to show them, like, somebody throws a punch at you, you know, here's your entry, here's your exit. But keep your hands up, turtle up. You know, get off the line. Get off the attack, angle of defense. They should learn that while doing their training, because you don't want anybody thinking, and I've seen this happen before, that, okay, this guy's going to throw a punch. I'm going to do a move on him, and that move is going to be so solid that he's not going to throw the second hand. And then they end up getting smacked, and then they're mad, like, oh, this stuff doesn't work. No, it doesn't work for you because you wasn't sparring and training with somebody to get that that okitori training.
Secondary defense. Right, right. Secondary defense is, yeah, it is important as well. But I think what I'm asking here, Brother Shah, I appreciate your answers. But I'm trying to go into that. you got a good kidney shot, man. And I don't want to put you in that shot to get you to feel what it feels like where somebody lightens up a kidney or a liver shot or whatever. But it's a devastating thing, you know. But what I'm saying is I want to describe the, if anything, the body motion. I want you to think of a kidney shot right now. You know, I got a good hook on you, and I hit you with a kidney shot. Can you envision that if it's your right side? Can you envision dropping your right elbow, like, down to your hip, right?
Yes, sir.
Can you envision this picture right? Is your head still in an upright position, standing up straight, or would you think it's kind of cocked over to the right?
Cocked over to the right.
Okay, good. So, again, we got the same picture in mind. So I hit you with this liver shot. Boom! You got hit with the shot. Now, I think what you was talking about is kind of like in a drill we got called traffic, where I kind of prepare for the shot. I'm not talking about the preparation. You got caught, money, okay? You got caught. But what I'm saying to you is that, am I teaching the student that there is a recovery time there? Am I teaching the student that when the air is knocked out of you, how you should be doing box breathing in order to get the air back into your muscles? Am I teaching the student that because my head is cocked to the side like that, if I don't get my hand up, like you said earlier, and like what I call an impact or a foam block on the opposite side, that I'm going to get caught again? Because if somebody throws a hook to my kidney, more than likely, if they're throwing them with their right hand to the left side of my kidney, I want you to envision this picture. Isn't that head wide open?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, for a two-piece, right? So am I teaching the student that if you ever get hit like that and you get caught, I'm trying to word this the right way. You need to forget about that shot because it's done. You need to be on to the next thing that's about to happen. Because if he didn't drop you from that first shot and you're not down, you're not out, you're not unconscious, you're hurt for sure. You're hurt. It hurts for real. It hurts. But you need to get over that, money, because something coming, and coming quick. And that was, as we do in our art, was the setup. Now, here's going back to what Professor James said earlier. I did that on purpose. We should not get hit and caught with the things that we know we do. I'm going to say it again.
Mm-hmm.
We set you up. That's our job. That's what we do. So Lucas is a setup. I said I should be on a T-shirt. But I can't afford to get set up by my setup. Because if I hit you in the kidney, that's just where I'm going the next time. I'm standing there like a surprise stop. Boom, you're all bent over, and I'm waiting for you to recover or reset. Or I hit you in the kidney, and I'm backing away from you. I'm not doing that. If I wanted to hit you in the kidney, and even if you drop your elbow down there to block, I'm on you so close. You know what kind of cologne I got. You understand what I'm saying here? So
yes,
you got to understand, like the professor just said, you can't get hit with the things that you do. I can't say, I make sure we put this in the archive because nothing could be more clearer. But if you know that, and you know that there's a 6-second delay in your breathing. Now, I'm not saying you should go out there and let your instructor hit you in the kidney so you know that, yeah, that's right. So that was right. 6 seconds. I'm just saying, take it into account that there's going to be a recovery time there for you to be moving. What should you be doing? Should you be stepping in? So that same crouch motion you had, should my head go down towards his body? Like most boxers do, they call it a clinch, when they hurt. Somebody rescue your brother if he's wrong here. Come on now. You see it happen all the time. You see the best do it. Muhammad Ali, look, George Frazier, come on. They all clench when they hurt. They know why. It takes about 6 seconds for that referee to break them up. They get their win back, and they get back in the fight because they done forgot about that. You better forget about that because something else is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right or wrong?
You're absolutely correct.
Absolutely right.
So they call it the sweet science for a reason, because science is being done there. They're putting the science of getting hit along with the science of hitting. You cannot go into total teaching people what to do, what to do, what to do, and not prepare them for if something happens to you, what do you do? What do you do? When you can't swim, you float. That's why they teach you to float before they teach you to swim. Maybe sure. Something wrong with your arm or your leg. You can't paddle your way to shore. Maybe you can float. Yeah, bro? Or am I just talking to myself here? Good. Somebody else help your brother Sean out and call in here, 646-716-6825. Sean, I know you know what I'm talking about, but I just wanted to make that clear about the point that I'm making here. You got hit. Professor Sims said it earlier. I ain't trying to give you my eyes because I know what happened. If I put your sight out, you pretty much got. Just saying. But if I know that and accidentally or I slipped up, see, I ain't supposed to teach a student that he can't slip up. That's not realistic. But if you slip up and your eyes get hurt, what do you do? 646-716-6825. I see some people just joined us here. I appreciate you. Thank you for calling in. But our subject matter, so you'll be up on point here, I got my guest here all the way from California. Brother Shaw is in the house with us, making sure we get it right. And earlier we heard Professor James Sims is going to be with us 8 days from now, or 7 days in a wake-up, and that's on April 27th. We're going to be doing the Family of Sanukis Seminar, Don't Call It a Comeback, 2024. In Brooklyn, New York at 1368 Fulton Street. So love to have you come out there. We're going to have no less than maybe 8 seminarians on the floor. Our good brother Hashi Salim al-Rashid will be out there as well, so you get a chance to meet and greet him. I know some of y'all think that he like 6 foot tall and they, you know, maybe. That's my brother, you know. But y'all can come out and see him for yourself, and he got a whole bunch of knowledge running around his head, pick his brain as well. And that's what we're doing here on the show. We're just sharing information. And, just talking about those things that bring us to higher understanding. Our show here today, we ask the question, how much attention, if any, should you pay to teaching how to respond in a self-defense situation to when you get hit? I know that's a mouthful there, but I let that digest with you in a while. But, you know, if you got it already, just press the number 1 and you can jump in on the conversation. Shaw, give me a little bit more about this aspect of it, this getting hit thing. What do you think?
I want to be clear on what the question is. You're asking us, should we teach this in self-defense classes?
Yes, sir.
We should. And I believe that sparring of some sort should be in self-defense classes. Or what, other people call rolling, because, we could practice techniques obitori, and then they may not get, like, okay, if this person hits me here, I may clinch up, like you said, but what do I do after that, like you said? So I think sparring should be the litmus test, should be the drill or the criteria that we use to gauge, like, okay, does this student understand that in a fight, I want to repeat this quote, everybody is a willing participant. Because boxing, when you're sparring, you're throwing a jab, somebody's throwing a jab at you, this ain't pad work. This is what's going to happen in the ring. Sparring for kumite, you're throwing punches, you're throwing kicks, like training with some of the Kyokushin guys, they're hitting you. They make 50% to the body, 40% to the head. But you need to know how it feels to get hit. I'm not saying beat up on your brother or your dojo mate, but it's definitely something that needs to be emphasized in that class of, yes, when you get a wrist lock, this is how a wrist lock feels. Do not get put in a wrist lock. You get put in a headlock, a full Nelson. This is how a full Nelson and a headlock feels. Do not get put in a full Nelson. So So I think that, if I'm asking a question, I think that's the gauge where we should be when we're teaching combat, self-preservation. I know some of the things is like the name of the game, and it's what we do. However, I'm kind of getting towards the self-defense should start when that person is engaging, whether it's a verbal, whether it's a look. It should never be like, oh, he threw the first punch, now it's self-defense time. It's this person is giving me that look. He's walking towards me. He's in my 6 feet. But, you know, COVID happened, so 6 feet is the name of the game now. He's in my 6 feet. Now this is self-defense time. Now what, you know, what should I do to gauge, you know, how I'm going to control this fight?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, I think that's to be told more than somebody throw a punch and then now you slip. No. Keep your hands up. Hands in the fight. You know, your movement is based off of, you know, he's throwing a punch at you. Okay, shot. You know, move. Men, you can talk about the assessment of controlling and attacking, attack control, and so forth and so on. I personally think that. I also wanted to comment on. I wanted to chime in on what James was saying about the knife quote about, because I watch these guys' videos in the executive protection industry, and a lot of them now are doing like knife work, knife techniques, and how to disarm. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, you know, there needs to be humbly should teach these classes, because these people are teaching them how to get cut with the mindset of you're going to get cut. So they're not teaching the defense, they're not teaching the offense, they're not teaching the, you know, maybe create the distance or move in. They're teaching just, yeah, grab the guy's hand. And I've seen another guy do what they call a stitch to the video that one person put up. And he said, if you grab a guy's hand with two hands, and a guy clinches to the other side, you don't see what he's doing with that other hand. He could switch the knife over, attack your hand, and the next thing you know, he going to town on you. So I do agree with what Professor James was saying about the fear that these teachers now are teaching the students. They're not necessarily teaching them. I don't agree with what they teach. I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay. Okay, let me, because you unloaded a whole shopping cart there, so let me kind of start from that way and go backwards. And I'm just going to sum this up real quick, because I was very much like you when I was younger under my teacher, Supreme Grandmaster Dr. Moses Powell, and very vocal like you about this, and many other students have expressed the same thing to me. Sometimes right in front of me, of the people, when we had seminars and stuff, and they getting, you know, very loud about, oh, unbelievable. They're just making comments and stuff. And I remember being at a place once and saying those very things, same things. Doc, look at this, man. This, oh, can't believe it. Do you believe that, Doc? Look at this, look at this. You know, I was lost into that because I love what I've been taught so much, and that this was looked so superior, and I had a better understanding. And he said these words to me, and please listen to them because I'm saying them to you. That's what they do, and we do what we do. And he dropped the mic. And I leave you with that and to say that, we're the vanguard of the martial art. We live in the martial art, too. This is making us all look bad. These people are going to get cut. These people are going to die if they follow this and they follow that or whatever. That's not our job. Our job is to be so good at what we do until we offer the public the clean glass. Now, I know you know what that expression means from where you come from. You offer the clean glass. You don't try to bring those people down or say whatever they do. That's what they do. And you do what you do. Your job is not to spend time trying to dissect and improve and do whatever to what they do. It has nothing to do with you. You do what you do. If you feel you have a better way to deal with a knife, whatever, bring that out so clear until people will make the right choice. And then we'll deal. It makes sense. Does what you do make sense? I've had people call my knife technique garbage. But they don't understand the nerve centers and pressure points that I'm striking in that arm to make you let go. I know you do because you stabbed at me. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Good. Did your arm feel really nice when I got finished with it?
I remember that lesson.
Yeah,
very well.
I know you do remember that. Well, that's the point that I'm making, that the people was looking at this and not you. They not the Uki. And that was friendly fire that I hit you with. I like you. I wouldn't do it that's like that for somebody else. I destroy that arm, and I do mean destroy it. You see, but when the people are looking at it, oh, look, oh, he would have got stabbed. Oh, look at that. Oh, I can't believe he thinks that nobody's gonna cut at you like that with a knife. They didn't even see me break his kneecap. You know, they didn't see me on the approaches I was going into it, what I did to his hands. They didn't see that. They didn't feel that. So that criticism on my behalf. But you know what? If you have something better, then you need to come show the public that. That's all. You don't have to put nobody down in order to lift yourself up. That's what they do. This is what we do. You ain't got to like what
we do.
We're not forcing it on you. But it's not our job to go out there. Because we'd be like I had an uncle who used to say, you know, you'd be like a one-legged man in a behind-kicking contest. You know, you're going to have a hard time trying to do that, standing on one leg, you know. So I kind of know what he meant by that. It wasn't no disrespect to nobody, there's only one leg. But basically, yeah, you trying to stand and kick somebody behind at the same time, that ain't going to work. You need to worry about standing. So the same thing happens, and, you know, used to be, oh, why there's no kicks and sanukis and this, that, and the other. My teacher told me, and he dropped this science on me. He said, the most vulnerable position you can be on this planet is standing on one leg. I was like, okay. You know, because you're worried about the kick, the hook kick, the wheel kick, the crescent kick, the like the Koreans do, they jump up in the air and break 15 boards and then come down and land. You know, they had to come down, don't they? I'm just saying. Let me stop. All right, but 646-716-6825. I thank you for that, brother. So I'm going backwards. I wanted to go, but I want to bring someone else in on the call. But I did want to address the fact that it seems like you're still talking about the contest or teaching somebody to move with the mover. And all those things are valid. But and it's really hard for a lot of people to accept what I'm saying here. You got hit, money. Somebody hit you. It ain't trying to block it no more. It ain't what to do with it. It's like in a self-defense situation. So here's an example, and I'm going to come back to you in a minute. I'm teaching a student what to do if somebody collar you up and swing and hit at you. Now, the first thing, I'm going to teach you how to block and do this, that, and the other. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to do that. I'm going to hit you. You're going to block, and I'm going to let go and hit you with a two-piece. I'm going to see what you do with your body. And then I'm going to say, if you get hit, because you're going to get hit with the two-piece. I'm trying to tell you that right now. Because you're too focused on trying to remember the technique that I just showed you. Never anticipating that this person is going to let go and hit you with a two-piece. Then I'm going to ask you, why is your head still in the same position? Why aren't you leaning?
Yes,
you're going to get hit, but why aren't you teaching your body to dictate the way you lean forward to the side as opposed to going back? Okay, let's try it again. Bing, bing. And I'm going to do it again. And your body's going to do something natural, and I'm going to show you. See how that natural thing you just did? You're going to get hit again here and here. So it's going to look like, how am I supposed to remember all of that? You don't. You don't. Your body remembers it. And you're going to remember, I'm going to tell you the things that you're doing this vulnerable and the things that you're doing this good. You know, you spoke about going into the turtle a minute ago. Yeah, most people do. When you're being stomped, you go into the turtle. You go into protecting. You go into protecting your vitals and what to do because you're being hurt. But what happens with you're getting stomped in the ribs and you're down there, that feeling that you are gone, if you allow them to keep on doing it, you're going to go out in a minute. Two or three people stomping you, you ain't got much time before you go out. What do you do?
Sure.
That's what I'm talking about. And so it sort of reminds me of, and please no one take this the wrong way. But it sort of reminds me of being jumped in a gang. They beat the crap out of you to see if you can survive. And then if you can, you belong with them. But you start whining and crying and doing all that kind of stuff, you can't be in here. Am I making my point?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
yes, sir.
I just want to make sure I'm making a point here. I'm not suggesting that nobody jump people in their dojo or whatever, but that's the way I see that process there. They want to know, can you take it? Because they're saying that in a real self-defense situation, you're going to have to take some to get some. 646-716-6825. Hold on, Shah. I'm going to come back to you. I appreciate you so much. Brother Shah calling in,
yes,
and
sir,
making sure we understand that, yeah, there's some teaching that we may have to be able to deviate from a little bit just to be able to get a higher understanding. Who else we got there? I don't want to lose nobody there, Hanshi.
Yes, sir. We have Tayuku.
Tayuku, the warrior known as Tayuku, brother. What's going on?
Jambo Soke, Jambo Hashi.
Jambo, bro.
Jambo Shah, Brother Shah.
Yes, sir. He can hear you on the other line, but he's on mute just so we can hear what you got to say loud and clear. Did you hear our subject matter here for today?
I believe I did.
Let me hit you with it one more time so you can come at me with your – with your best knowledge. No, it's not a trick question like Professor James said. It's just it's just what the inquiring minds would like to know. We're asking the question, how much attention, if any, should you pay to teaching how to respond in a self-defense situation to when you get hit? I know it's a lot of words there, and I don't want you to think that I'm tricking you, but there is some words there that you need to digest, as in, when you get hit in a self-defense situation, and how much attention? 75%, 25%, the 50? Those are, you know, it's asking those multiple questions. You know, some you may say, well, as an instructor, you know, I say 30% of my training is about that. You know, something like that. And then maybe proceed to tell me what that is. So let me get my pen. Okay.
I think the key word there for me is when you get hit, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, it could be a surprise. It could be he's right in front of you and you got hit. But I think the key word is how do you respond to that? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I think it's super important because it's different, you know, it's different from
mm-hmm.
a fight, it's even different from the regular self-defense where you're 3 foot or 6 foot, it's
mm-hmm.
different. So when you get hit is the key. Now, how do you react? I think is really key because, you know, you teach techniques like if he grabs you, grab him back, unlock your knees, go into protection, get off the line. You know, these are principles that need to be taught, you know, when you get hit, because it's a shock to your system, and you need to learn how to recover from that shock and do what you got to do. So percentage-wise, I think it should definitely be at least, I would say 60% of your training, especially where we are in the city, New York City specifically. You know, we see a lot of crazy people out there, and you know, so you know, for me as a teacher, I'll make it like 60% of my training, and the key is what to do when you get hit, how to recover, things you need to do, and you need to practice these things. They won't come naturally if you do get hit. And I think that's really important. Check.
Well, thank you, brother. I mean, I appreciate the way you dissected that as well. And your percentage is very much on point. Some people would say maybe, you know, 10 or 20% more or less than that. And again, as an instructor, I'm willing to adjust those things as well as we go, per age, per gender, per whatever, per environment, environment situations. And this is why we said in a self-defense situation. And the reason why is because, let me give you this scale. I'm going to say self-defense is 51. I'm going to give it one more percent. 51, because, you know, if you deal with something one more percent, it automatically tips the scale. Self-defense is pretty much 51%. Surprise. Stay with your brother now, okay? For it to be 51% surprise, and the quote is, there is no defense against the element of surprise. I got to say, whoa. I got to say, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. A self-defense situation that has not even happened already is stacked against me. And I've heard this from more than one great master that has taught me. So wait a minute. Now, they're not saying that, oh, in a knife defense, you're going to get cut. And they're not saying stuff like that. Or you're just boxing to prepare yourself to get hit because you're going to get hit. They're not saying that. That's why I say evaluate the quote here of self-defense. Now, y'all rescue your brother if he's wrong, but it's about surprise. Ain't nobody telling you they coming.
Yes.
Even if it's a confrontation, a verbal confrontation, and we are talking about, we're arguing, or whatever, I ain't triggering when I'm about to tee off on you. You may, at a glance, miss that. Boom, caught you. I didn't say it knock you out. He's punching you in the face, and peripheral vision caught it at the split of a second, and you turn, boom, and it caught you right on the side of your head. But let me just tell you this. Ever since we were kids, even in the schoolyard fight, if you get touched in any kind of way, oh, tell you who got hit in the face, oh, that set off a whole other thing about you because you ain't even hurt. But yes. Sometimes that element of this getting caught like that or this, listen, that sound can take you into a whole other way of responding to the next thing that you're going to do. Because once you've been touched, pushed, grabbed, choked, whatever it is, the next move is on you. And to quote my teacher, never let him finish his one. You got that one, baby, but you ain't going to go back to tell nobody about it. Because I'm there. I'm on you. And I'm on you by movement. And it doesn't mean I'm coming back and getting off of two feet, bah, bah, and I'm on top of you before that. That doesn't mean that. That means that I put myself in a position where you never get to. I crouch. I move. I step. Even if I got dropped to my knees, my body has been trained to fall towards you. And this is what you have to teach. You have to put a student, choke them, swing at them, pull them to their knees, and let them know, why are you over there? You need to fall towards it. You don't have to beat them up. You can just show them the error of their ways because they're going to do something that's against the countering action to prepare them for the next thing. They're going to do that. When he hits you, why didn't you grab him back? When he grabbed you, why didn't you grab him back? The reason that I teach when someone grabs you, grab them back, can get tagged. And if you do, you're now plugged in. That's the term I use, plugged in. I can feel your next motion because my hand is on your hand. I can feel your whole body when it moves. I can close my eyes and feel when you're getting ready to tee off and rev back and hit me with the other hand because you may not see it. So you got to be able to involve all of your senses in there. You have to be able to hear. You have to intensify your hearing so you hear him when he take that deep breath to kind of clock you out because they all do. Why we know this, why are we not teaching it? Will it happen every time? Maybe not.
Yeah.
But I'm putting you in that frame of mind that, boom, I've been hit. Boom, I'm on a whole nother kind of defense thing now. I got to make sure this doesn't happen again. Why? Because you're not out. And if you're not out, you're not down. And if you're not out and you're not down, you should be fighting for survival.
That's right.
And if you ain't in that survival mode, ain't no kind of technique that I teach you going to work. You got to get in survival mode. We got to get in survival mode. And we see that a lot of times people get punched in their face, boom, 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 and homeboy still ain't let go. See, I mean, you're in survival mode. You've been cut. You've been punched in the face, whatever, whatever. But you distinctively know if I let this guy go, I got a grip on him. If I let him go, I'm going to be out of the fight because my body is going to start to move away from trying to fight him to total survival mode for myself. But I can't let him get away. He got to take something with him. I thought, are you down on his knees? He got to take something with him. There's not an instep on the planet that has a shoe that has a steel instep, a steel toe, not a steel instep. I will crush. Listen to me. In my martial art training, I break boards, right? I think the highest I broke at one point was 8 boards. Your instep ain't made like that, homie. Let me tell you. Okay? You understand what I'm saying to you? How to put your skills to work for you. I will crush. Oh, I'll crush it till I hear it. Talk about fallen arches. Listen. You're not going nowhere because you're not kind of breathing hard because, you know, you got me there. That was a good one. You know, I got to recover. But you're going to be there while I'm recovering. Am I making my point?
Absolutely.
While I'm recovering, you're going to be looking for your eyeball. Am I making my point?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I need you to understand that. What am I teaching? That if you get hit, listen to me. In a disaster, they teach you how to make a go bag, don't they?
Yep.
Sure. Everybody understand what a go bag is?
Yes,
that's
sir.
What no. There ain't no remote control in a go bag, okay? You don't need a remote control. You don't need none of that stuff in the go bag. You need some stuff that's going to help you survive. You need to pack that up right now. And when they say yada, 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 whatever the condition is, you need to take that bag and get the moving. You can't even get a chance to pack it. Now, let me see what else I'm going to put in here. None of that. No jewelry goes in a go bag. You need to go. That's it. And you're out the door. But you prepare that go bag for that. You know, if a person jumping out of a plane, they got a parachute, but ain't nobody jumps out of a plane with one shoe. Not nowadays. See what I'm saying? Most people have been jumping out of planes for 10, 20 years, never use a secondary chute, but they ain't trying to jump without it. Teaching your students about the response in a self-defense situation, right? If you're teaching a fire drill, that's nice to know what to do with fire, but what do they teach you in a fire drill on top of what to do about the fire? They teach you how to respond to smoke. Okay, now, this ain't a real test. But tell me, what do they tell you about smoke? Where should you be?
At the bottom.
Low.
Go to the floor.
Listen, I don't know, man. Y'all some kind of geniuses or something. Because that's right. They teach you to get low to the floor.
Low.
You know what I'm saying? There ain't no fire down there. But the smoke inhalation, will that put you on your back and so you can get burnt up?
Yes, sir.
Sir.
That's my point.
True.
That's my point. So you need to know about smoke just as much as you need to know about fire. I'm going to drop the mic right there because we're at the top of the hour. 646-716-6825. Tayuka, I'm going to let you bring your brother Shaw back. You might want to say us to him. Shaw?
Us,
Jambo.
Jambo Shaw.
Well, I got the three of y'all on here right now. Yes, sir. I got the three of y'all on here right now. I know y'all think I'm trying to beat you up, but I hope you got some education from that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You gave all the answers to the test. Okay.
but I'm going to need you to use it from now on. And the reason why I posed the question this way is because self-defense is near and dear to me. I've been practicing the arts for a minute now. And, you know, some say I'm good at it, and some say I still need some work at it, and that's cool. But self-defense is not a thing that I get ready for. I can't get dressed in the morning and forget my self-defense. I can't walk out the door and check my pockets and, oh, got to go back because I forgot my self-defense. I don't never want to be in that situation. You know what I mean? I want to know I want to feel that I will know what to do when I'm under stress. I love so many extreme sports. You know, I was watching some surfing the other day. Yeah, I know. Let me finish before y'all start talking about me. But I was watching some surfing the other day, and I had to give the surfer all that mad respect. Now, his desire is to stay on that board to the end, you know, till he get to the shore. He want to be able to walk off that board on the shore. But I want you to tell me, how many times in your life have you ever seen a surfer surf a wave to the shore and just walk off the board like, you know, I don't know, don't happen. But he already understands he's going to go under. He don't know how long that wave is going to keep him under. Half the time we don't know. He's being tossed upside down. He don't even know which way is up. But he is preparing his body for that shock. If you're not prepared for that shock, you'll kill yourself, not the waves, not the water, but you'll swim the wrong damn way and run into a rock. You'll panic. But am I making my point here?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So the wave is putting you into a shock situation, and every time that he goes under that water and he leaves that surfboard, it's different every time. You got to give him respect because he's training his body that what happens when I fall, not if, when I fall off this board. And so you can't teach a person self-defense that's already stacked against you 51% because it's based off the element of surprise and think that you don't have to practice for it. Because chance favors the prepared mind. And so if I prepare your minds for this, chance will favor me, and I'll come up victorious, and guess what? Now I can do my stuff. But if you just think you're going to just walk in there and do your stuff and uninhibited, you know, I hit him, boom, boom, and he went and he dropped. Like we play Ukitori all the time, that unnecessary. Because here's the main part, and I'll leave you on this note and see if anybody else wants to join us, is that there's a thing in the body called adrenaline. It's in your body, and it's in your adversary's body. Now, adrenaline is not to any race of people, creed, height, gender, muscular composition, or intelligence. If you hit a human being and you activate this automatic thing that happens in the body, adrenaline starts flooding the muscle. It gets you pumped up. It really is the biggest drug. If they could start putting adrenaline in the body, it would take cocaine and make it look like an aspirin. But my point here is that it is the thing that can get you going to be able so you don't feel anything else. And your body's going to do that. So you can hit a guy and adrenaline is running through his body, and what you thought was a powerful hit wasn't as powerful as you thought. And before you could pull your fist back, homie done teed off on you. You got hit. The number one, as I said before, you've been surprised. So the 51% is now working against you. Unless you got something to change that tide there, that 51% is going to continue working against you. And some of the best people who know the best techniques, who can do whatever they can do, cannot do it in a stress situation. This is why I constantly teach my students to move in and out, left and right, change your angles, to move. Whether you see something coming or not, if you look at some of the best, they do it all the time. When Mike Tyson is doing his freight train and he's coming in, he's moving. Nobody ain't even punching at him. Y'all need to go back and check the film. They ain't even punching at him yet, but he's moving. He's moving to who they want. When you're playing basketball and you're going to the hole to shake somebody, you're not waiting for them to step in the same direction as you. You're shaking them. You have to do more movement than they're moving. Then all of a sudden they go, momentum will take them and they can't change direction quick enough, and you go there. These are things that you can be shown in action. But you have to be able to teach it with a purpose and show them that there is purpose in responding to the thing that failed. 646-716-6825. So come on, Tayuku, sum it up for me. We at the top of the hour. Did I make any sense there? Does it fit into your your composition of self-defense?
It's okay. You teach us this all the time, so this is kind of cheating. You know, when somebody puts you in a chokehold, you know, get a lighter. You know, you got a lighter in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to let go. Get your knife out. He's going to let go. So these are surprise things you teach us all the time. When you're getting, like you said, when you get put down to the ground, why are you not rolling towards a guy's leg, right? Why are you going into a turtle? When he grabs you, grab him back. When you get hit, go into protection. Go towards him, right? So these are things that he teaches all the time. So everything you said makes sense. Surprise, there's no defense for a surprise. Like you said, you know, and you made a really good point. If there's no defense for surprise, why isn't everybody teaching self-defense, right? That's a really good point. So that percentage should definitely be higher. You know, if there is no defense for surprise, and 99.9% of attacks are surprise, why are we going to teach self-defense?
Because basically, to realize that that's a fact and then go from there, there's nothing you can do about that. That's why my beloved teacher said that's what they do and this is what we do. We accept the fact that there's nothing that we can do about that at least, and I'm only giving it one percentage. Like you said, it should be higher than that. But why are we teaching self-defense if there's no defense against the element of surprise when self-defense is about being surprised? We understand that. But it's no different than saying, you know, why we keep trying to fly and we ain't got no damn wings. But we manifest that flying every day. Do planes crash? Yeah. Birds fall out the air too. But the means to justify the end. How are we taking this fact and then working around it so that we get that 1% back? Not in the same way. Now, this is what I mean. If there's 1% more, the surprise is always going to happen, then what other elements are always going to happen? Reaction to the surprise. See? The surprise can happen, but no way am I teaching reaction to the surprise. I can walk up behind you, you can't see me at all, and I slap you in the back of the head. You know, I've done this many a time to Hanshi Salim when we were growing up. Just walk behind him, pop, rap, the backside of his head. But
that's right.
when he grabbed his head, is the thing that we didn't notice at the time that it was a lesson. But most people do that even before they turn around. They get their hands up to their head, and then go into some type of looking to see what it's about. How many times have you, as a kid, and still to this day, we do it as a joke. We were behind somebody and we tapped them on their right shoulder, but we go to their left.
Yeah.
Why? Because they turned to the right where they felt it at. Do they ever think, this probably is that joke again, let me go to the left? No, they don't. Instinct is going to make you turn to the right. It just happens. So if you know that, then why are you doing that? It's going to happen. So why not envision this whole situation again? Somebody taps you on the shoulder. Why not take a one step forward, put your hands up, and turn around? Same thing.
Have you
thought about that? You see? And that's what I'm saying about teaching the element of surprise. Surprise when I tap you on the shoulder. Why just turn around or even just put your hands up? You got feet. They ain't holding your feet. Why? Because that's going to put some distance between whoever tapped you. Most people's arms are not longer than 3 feet, 4 feet. So if you take another step, if a person touch you at a 3-foot range, you take one more step forward, you're at least a whole nother foot away from them. So if they are going to stab you, swing, or whatever they're going to do, you got more space in between you and the oncoming attack. Chance.
Mm-hmm.
Favors to prepare mind. But that's all I'm saying is that little lesson there, you can still teach the, oh, if they tap you, turn around and do this wrist lock and lock the arm and do this. You can still do that. But what about that preparation of distance that you can't see? What about moving your head towards a person, because people throw punches away from them, not towards them? So that's canceling it halfway. Go halfway in the direction of where it came from, not away from it. That's teaching the response. And so, because what I'm saying, if you're going to get hit, if I got hit and I'm coming in like that and I'm coming in on an angle, it's going to probably just glance off me. But guess what happens now after the glance? I'm there. This is the same principle that BJJ practices all the time when they're going for the sprawl. They'll take a shot from you just to go in and get your leg, and you're done because you panic. The guy got your legs. You up top. You can't hit it. All you got is his back and the shell, and you never think the next thing to do. He got your legs. He's panicking you. Why? Because nobody's ever tried to take your legs from you. And it's a scary feeling because you feel yourself being lifted from the ground. You have no foundation. What do you do? I'll leave it on that note. As instructors, I ask you to do that. Pick your student up and ask them, what do you do? And watch what they do instinctively. Beat on your back like the lady in the King Kong movie when King Kong picks her up. Come on, Shaw, you're still on the line with us. I don't see nobody in the back office. Again, thank you all for tuning in. I see we got about 12 people in the back there. You know, you're always invited to jump in the conversation. Just press the number one, even if it's to tell me to hold on, Soke. You're going too far. Get me straight here for a minute. See if anybody else raised their hand there, Hashi.
Yes, sir.
Until we come back, Shaw, tell me what you got on what we got here so far. How about that? Being picked up. What are you teaching a student about being picked up?
You know, I haven't taught that, because I haven't thought about that in the matter of when I'm teaching the people that I've been teaching. But I do remember that one time I was in a dojo setting and somebody picked me up, and my generation called you earth somebody. You get them by their legs and you lift them. I took my body weight to go down, to going downwards. I grabbed their leg, and I kind of, rolled with it. And I remember, I don't know if I did that with, I think you told me that. I believe you told me that. And some people didn't agree with it. Some people didn't agree with it. And I remembered that. I never remembered necessarily why I did it. I just know I remember learning that from you. I've not taught that to anyone yet, but I've used it before.
Yes, sir. Yes, so, sir. Well, I wanted to just bring out the fact that I don't really want to get to the, and not what I taught you does work, to stop it. I just kind of emphasize this, and I don't want to keep beating anybody over the head with this, is that it happened already. You are up in the air. I think what I taught you is to get it so, he's not going to get you. He went for the legs, he didn't get it, and then we went and we anti-ed that technique. I'm talking about when you feel yourself, if anybody's ever fallen on a plane, it's a unique feeling when you feel those wheels leave. You know what I'm saying? You're like, this is a couple of tons in the air. They just got up off the earth, and you're like, I don't know. It's always an amazing feeling to me, that first. It's like you're like, damn. This is something, man. All of this weight that just got up off the air. Well, it feels like that when somebody has actually lifted you, because as you just said, you're pressing down to try to stop it, try to stop it, try to stop it. It ain't happening. You're off the ground.
Yeah, you're ready.
So, and when you're up like that, it's just feeling the weightlessness, and you feel like, what am I going to do? So here's my technique, and I'm going to see if I can let our next guest in. His head is more than likely near your belt. I want y'all to envision this with me, okay? He's got the sprawl on you. He's got your legs, for sure. And he's moving forward like a rhino. And like an airplane taking off, you're leaving the air. I mean, you're leaving the ground slowly but slowly. You can feel the tiptoes of your shoes scratching the ground because you're about to be lifted. Your hands don't belong back there. Your hands need to immediately go to your waist on the inside and hold his neck. They need to. Can everybody envision what I'm saying here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Your hands need to go like you're trying to put your hand in your pants. Down there, like where your genitals are. Like, shove your hand down there. But get his neck. And I don't care how much he pick up, he's going to be choking himself as he pick you up. See, we don't think about that because we're panicking. We're leaving the earth. He's about to pick me up. He's about to slam me or whatever. But the quicker my hand go to that position, as opposed to trying to anti-sprawl and sprawl backwards, and my hands are down near his legs. Yeah, you with me now?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Sure.
Okay. Then my hands need to go back near his neck and put them there. I'm not trying to choke him. I'm just waiting for him to lift. And when he lifts, he's got 100 and something more pounds on his neck. Now, you're lifting me up, and I'm not trying to choke you. I just got my hand down in my pants around your neck. And when you lift me, you're going to be lifting me with your neck now, not your shoulders, not your body. Because if his shoulders are near my hips, he's not lifting me with his neck. He's lifting me with his shoulders. He's got his hands near my leg. He's lifting me that way. He's not lifting me with my neck because I've taken all my weight and put it on his back. You need to be on his neck and let him go ahead and try to pick you up when you're holding on to his neck. And tell me how that worked out for you, okay? 646-716-6825. Who else we got back there? We passed the hour here. Our conversation has been a lively one. We asked the question, how much attention, if any, should you pay to teaching how to respond in a self-defense situation when you get hit? And we've had some conversation about avoiding it and what happens and how we should counter it, but in a contest. But we're talking about in self-defense. And if you're an instructor, how much attention are you putting towards that? Or if any, we said if any. Some people say, I don't put no attention to that. I had a teacher, listen, I hit him, he going to go down. Ain't no need for me to be able to teach about what happens if. I mean, I'm trying to put that in those student mind. If you get hit, I got to respect that. Because as my beloved teacher said, that's what they do. And this, we do what we do. All right? 646-716-6825. Who else we got back there?
Yes, sir. We have Professor Sean Davis.
Ah, I good brother. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. How are you? Peace, warriors. How's everyone?
Everyone's blessed, brother. Everybody good, great. Professor? Us?
Yes. Good, Professor. Yes, how's everyone doing? I love this conversation. It's funny that you mentioned this tonight. I think it's a very good conversation. First of all, I would like to say I think this type of training should be done just as much as we teach to avoid or to counter or to be an attack. We need to do is the same amount, in my opinion. My book, I speak about this. In the book I did, the last book I did in October, was The Study of Violence. And in there, there's something I call elimination recovery. Elimination recovery is basically what you do when you get hit, right? What you're doing is, you know, once you get hit, you got to try to recover and eliminate him going further. That's what elimination recovery is, basically. So, like, say a guy stuns me and I hit my jaw and I go towards the ground and I'm about to put my hand on the ground, just like I heard you mention about Tyson. He was looking for his mouthpiece, but his hands was on the ground. Me, what I try to train my students in is if you hit, you falling down that way and your leg is going up, you should be kicking him, right? And as instead of my hand just going to the ground, I might be reaching for a blade or something to hold on to get up and recover. You see, instead of just grabbing the ground and looking for myself, he's going to start wailing on me from there or stomping me if I fall, right? So I'm thinking like, oh, I'm doing this. Let me grab something. Let me grab his ankle, you know, staying attached, trying to stay attached to him. If he's wailing on me, and you want to try to look for just like basic six things I try to do, and you want to try to stay alert as much as possible. And the best way to try to stay alert is to start to try and control your breathing, taking those small little during chaos, you know. Then you try to protect all your vital areas if possible, covering the face, you know, groin areas, whatever you can. Then you want to try to look for opportunities. You know, you want to keep an eye out for openings and vulnerabilities, whatever you can. You know, attack offense. Just look for weak points if you can. And if that doesn't work, you try to use, you know, verbal assertiveness. You know, verbal assertiveness is like, you know, try commands to de-escalate further. You know, hopefully yelling out or something. You know what I mean? Use your surroundings if there's a chair, obstacles, whatever you can do. You know, and you want to try to focus on escape. You're talking about survival, right? First of all, self-defense should always train, and self-defense you should always train for sudden violence. I speak about that a lot in my book, sudden violence. When we know something is coming, it's easy to get prepared, a lot more easier to get prepared for it and things like that. I'm talking about that out of nowhere. Boom, boom. You know, you're disorientated. How do you recover? You know, so work on that, you know. Snatching you from behind. Oh, you didn't expect it. You know, blindfold. I heard you speaking about, you know, you grabbing a person, you touching them, and things like that. Very important. We call that body feel. You know, how do you lock somebody without seeing? If somebody throws salt in my eye, you know, and he grabs me, I know where his hands are. And if I know where his hands are and I understand the body, I know his center line is here. I know I could get my thumb in his eye, hopefully, my hands on his throat, my hand on his groin, a finger lock or something. So I just wanted to share that.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Man, I got to do that again. Come on, man.
I really want to go deep, but, you know, I'm just trying to get it.
No, but did he take us to school, huh, Shia? Did he take us to school?
Yes, sir.
I appreciate that. Yes, sir. Oh, man. I ran out of ink, man. I know a better way to do it. Tell us the title of that book, brother, so we can put it in our library. What's the name of your book?
I'm sorry. It's called The Study of Violence by Sean Davis. It's on Amazon. The Study of Violence. Yes. So I tap into those types of things. I think it's very important because a lot of times when I was attacked by these gangs in Brooklyn, it was always sudden. You know, I didn't know it was coming. And when I got slashed 16 times in my arm, that was sudden violence. You know, and I had to use elimination recovery to not get stabbed. I got slashed up, but I didn't get stabbed. And the reason why I didn't get stabbed because I used elimination recovery. So so this topic is like perfect, man.
Because
we spend so much time on the prevention and the counter, right? But what happens when we get touched? How do we do that? You know, and a lot of boxing is what helped me. As well, my boxing background helped me put being touched and how to do things into the martial arts.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know.
Wow, thank you, brother. Professor Sean Davis is unloading here for us. Please, please put that in your library. The Study of Violence by Sean Davis. And I know you also going to be out on our Bless Our Floor on the
next week, 7 days in a wake up on April 27th. For those who want to come out and shake the hand of this great brother, and I also gonna bless her being on the floor for us. And you know, I'm gonna have my study of violence there for him to autograph. You might want to bring yours too. All right, so go on to Amazon and show up at the event and make that all happen. But again, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Wow,
yes,
you know. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you out. I was just saying, yes, I will be attending, and it'd be an honor for me to get on the floor and work with you guys.
Appreciate you, brother. We really do. And you know, I couldn't have had a better guest on the show for that, because talking the talk and walking the walk and sharing his life experiences with us and basically just sharing with you, because he's here with us today. Because he is doing these things that we talk about here. He put the study into effect, and again, his survival mode kicked in when he did these things that we're talking about, is being able to survive the element of surprise, multiple attacks, and things coming at you rampantly. And, you know, there's one of the things that the timing of strikes coming at you, either it's going to be very slow or very fast. And let me explain what I share with y'all. What I mean by that is that a lot of times inside of a conflict, your adversary wants to see his own work. He'll hit at you, pop, 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 and he'll not step off you, but he'll look to see if you daze from it. He'll look to see what's your response from what he's doing, and before he launches his next whatever, or pop, 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 and run, or move, or try to get out of range because maybe you were dazed and he could see the way you lunged at him was you was off balance, so he's just gonna like just wait until he can do the next thing. And again, these are the actions of predators. Predators do that.
Yes.
I don't know how many times you've seen a lioness will claw their prey, and they don't go right in right away. And then sometimes the lioness will just lock onto the bewildered beast's neck and just stand there and hang out. And the beast is alive, and they just hanging out like, you know, in a minute. You ain't going to be breathing because my jaws is not going to let go. And that's the way they kill. They don't try to just claw it to death or whatever. So when you watch the actions of predators, understand that a human being is a predator. He's fighting animalistically like that. And again, the quick flashing and slashing. I don't know if you've ever watched a cat. Cat feels threatened. You can't count how many times a cat will paw at you. Now, whether their nails are out or not, but they'll slap the crap out of you. Like, pop, 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 pop.
Yes.
Deal with that.
Oh, man.
So it's a beautiful thing, again, to give credit to our Asian brothers when they made an attempt to study the animals, the insects, because they understood that these predators, in order for them to live, they had to have these predatorial ways of looking at things, of how to analyze their prey and how to make their prey succumb to the attack. Sometimes it's fast, sometimes it's slow. So the timing of that, and you spoke about that, Professor, when you said, you know, you may have to be down there holding on to a pants leg and stuff to know when the timing is there, because you can't, not you can't, but I do a drill with my students where I make them close their eyes as I tap them on their forehead, and then subliminally they will move even though I don't touch them, like after the third or fourth tap, because the body starts to get a rhythm to getting hit.
Yes.
And you have to be able to break that rhythm or offset that rhythm in order for you to get, quote-unquote, back in the fight. But if you have not taken timing into consideration, you thinking you can just weather the storm and wait for them to get tired of whipping your behind, not a good strategy. So I appreciate you, Professor, because we talk about
that,
and we can have these in-depth discussions about these things that sound also suggestional, but they are science. And we know that science will always prove itself to be true, because it's all going to come down to a mathematical equation anyway. So let's try to make sure that we got math on our side and science on our side, you know. Because breaking those laws, there can be a devastating consequence to them every single time. 646-716-6825. That's our number to call in. My special guest today is Professor Sean Davis, as well as Tayuku and Brother Shah from California. And you've been awful quiet back there, Hanshi. You jump in here anytime. I know you started the show out for us, but we got about maybe 30 more minutes, though, Brother. You with me, brother. You with me. And I see we got some people in the back there. Brother Sean has dropped off, and I figure he has something to do, but I appreciate him dropping through as well. But
yes, sir.
Give me some feedback on that, Tayuku, what Professor Sean was talking about.
Oh, it's Jambo.
Jambo.
I was taking notes too, okay?
Yes, sir.
That's why he has a professor in front of his name. he definitely mirrored pretty much what you teach. Mm-hmm. I mean, he mm-hmm. couldn't have said it any better. Talking about, recovery from attacks, and when you go down, you go towards the individual. You grab the ankle. I mean, this is everything you teach, and this is mm-hmm. it's. And I think this is the reality of the situation. This is
yes, sir.
This is what happens for real, you know. And I think survival, is paramount to is actually the definition of survival. This is one of this, what was discussed just now is the definition of it, you know. He spoke truth. Definitely.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I think the term self-defense has been popularized, so that people can understand. Everyone wants to defend themselves, because of it. What is it? What's that expression about preserving your own life that comes to mind in a minute?
Is it the first self-preservation?
There you go. Thank you. I know my brother, boy. He know that book stuff. Well, he always quotes. Yeah. Well, he was like that when we was kids, too. Yeah, son, that ain't the correct way to say it. Your grammar is wrong. Nobody wanted to go with him half the time. He said, but my brother... The grammar and pronouncing them words is like, shut up, man. You know what I mean. You was going to say something? You were jumping in?
Yeah, I was, I was listening to the different speakers, and none of them I can discount. I thought about, some animals getting caught. I'm talking about predators getting caught in the trap. And they look around, and it's like, hey, you know what? I got three paws left, so I'm biting this one off so I can survive. Mm. And that's what Sanukas is, simplicity and survival. Oh, man, I can't believe how she bit this guy's nose off when he was choking him. Guess what? How did you know? Because Hanshi survived to tell your ass that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you got to be around to tell the tale, right?
Hey, man, many situations, growing up when we did, man, is they called it fighting dirty. I can't believe, man, he kicked him like that, man. He kicked him. Really? Where? But the thing is, you down there, and like you said, you breaking boards or you whatever, and you're used to it. You're used to the technique. You're used to pressure, breaking boards, or let me say Tamashawari. You're used to breaking. Now you down there. The first thing I thought about, grab that ankle and hit that kneecap sideways. He ain't going nowhere.
Sir.
And that pain is excruciating. Trust me.
Yes, sir.
Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want him chasing me. I want recovery time. Okay, you hit me, I'm right by you.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me. You're going to beg me to kill you.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, what we talk about also is core training. This is, again, giving credit to the sweet science, which is boxing. A championship boxer spends more time taking punches than giving.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it again.
Mm-hmm.
A championship boxer spends more time conditioning himself, taking it, getting hit in the stomach with a medicine ball over and over again, having different people with different weight characteristics and different punching abilities to punch him in vital
mm-hmm.
organs in his body. I dare anybody that doesn't train for that to let somebody punch you in the rib cage and the liver for 12 rounds. It's just the average person is not going to be able to even come close to something like that. That's what makes a boxer a dangerous commodity, because he basically can take it. And his response
mm-hmm.
time to getting hit is off the chain. I'm just
mm-hmm.
watching Tank Davis, a fight that he did not long ago. And the reason why I think so many people get hit with his stuff is because he has a powerful left hand. And most fighters don't deal with stuff coming from the left being right-handed and
yeah.
fighting from that right-handed style. So they're not – if they are, their reflexes is way off. It's just like most people are not ambidextrous like that in the defense on that side of the body. And, like, I remember one of the fights he said, I didn't even hit him that hard. You know, I think it was – forgive me for laughing, but the fight where he – beat Rowley and knocked him through the ropes. I'm laughing at him because, you know, he was talking so much junk. But basically, at the end, Tank said, I didn't even hit him that hard. But he was so open. If you see that fight, he was so open on that side, you could have blew on him and he would have went flying. But my point here is that you can find a person's weaknesses by strengthening the things that you see this weakness in the other person. So, again, don't
mm-hmm.
get caught with the stuff that you know that you're going to put on somebody. You know, I barely see Tank get hit with anybody's left. You know, I'm good with mine, but I'm sure nobody hit me with no left like I can hit somebody with a left. And I think that that's the point that I'm saying here, going back to it from
yes.
that end. But going back to it from the end of I got hit, again, he's another good fighter. When you watch him, and like many fighters, before the guy can get his glove back off of his face from the jab, he got another jab in his face. He's not responding, wait till the jab is over to go fight back. Another fighter like that I remember was Camacho. I love fighters that
yeah.
they never blink. This guy would punch you right in the face and his eyes is wide open. And he's ready to hit you back.
Mm-hmm.
The instant you're hitting him, he's hitting you too. Because most people
mm-hmm.
are waiting to see what happens after they jab. Jab, what happens? Jab, what happens? Before you can say what happened, you get jabbed back. And so you want to be
right.
able to know that you can respawn inside of the action that's going on. Same thing, like I said, grab, re-grab. You don't even know what the grab is about, but get your hand on his thing, on his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically he's not feeling the threat of your hands, because your hands are near his hands, but they're not doing anything until it's time to do something. But they need to be there in place first. And so those
yes,
responses,
sir.
I think, that I was talking about. Conversation is good here today. We got about maybe 15, 20 more minutes to the show. I just want to take the time out to thank our guests for coming on the show today. And please, on Amazon, reach out and look for that book by Professor Sean Davis, The Study of Violence. I know he would appreciate it. I know I'm going to be as soon as we get off
yeah.
the show tonight. You know, you might want to be able to come out if you're in the Brooklyn, New York area this April 27th, Saturday at 12 noon. The family of Sanukis is doing their annual seminar. This is the first one we've done since COVID. And we've been out of COVID about over 4 years now, but we intend on making this an annual event. So it'd be nice to see you out on the mat. Come out, shake a hand, make a friend. Again, that address is 1368 Fulton Street. That's Restoration Plaza, the corner of, I think, it's New York Avenue. So you can come on out and pick our brain there as well. I got some stuff I want to unload out there. I know there'll be a lot of professors from out of town there as well, a lot of snookers players, but everyone's welcome.
Yes, sir.
Aren't you?
You know, it's okay. Yeah, you made a statement about being ambidextrous, which I was taught from a child because people that were teaching me were left-handed. But I always, you know, we were always taught, I'm going to say this, in the old school, we were always taught that you shouldn't have a sugar foot, meaning you shouldn't have a favorite side of your body. So you always emphasize, you know, to learn to teach both sides of your body. You know, they used to have a saying in boxing circles, especially in the heavyweight division, because there wasn't too many of them, that all southpaws need to be killed at birth. You know, because of the position that they're in. You know, they're stepping on somebody's toe. You know, they get their toes stepped on a lot. They step on your toe because the way, you know, the way in which they're moving, it's not orthodox. They're, you know, you take Michael Moore. Michael Moore was a hell of a boxer, southpaw, naturally. And I consider boxing the sweet science of martial arts. But if you look at the fight when he fought Foreman, Foreman figured him out. Foreman kept throwing that left jab to get him to move to his right. And when he moved to his right, it was lights out. I said, oh, man, he walked him right into that one. You know, but, I emphasize, use both sides
of
your body.
Well, you know, I just wanted to make note to that, what you just said is perfectly what we're saying and to capitalize what we've been saying. I know that that exists, that he's a southpaw. There's nothing I could do about that, but I can study that scientifically to have an answer for him being a southpaw. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
Not hating on the fact that he is and figuring I'm going to punish him for that. I'm going to let his natural motion be his death. You know, I tell my students that all the time. Why are you picking his demise? Let him choose. You should have a catalog of death. You can die like this. Look, we got some new models in. Just came in today. You can go like that. You know, just pick one, and you'll be all right. You know, I want to think like a supermarket. The supermarket does not care what brand you buy. You've got 16 brands of every product in there. You come out of there, it's good. They ain't mad at you because you keep coming back buying the same thing, and they say, listen, you come back in the store again, you're going to have to buy another brand of potato salad, a salad dressing. Because you're just buying the same one all the time. See all the rest of these salad dresses on here? They don't care. You know? So stop trying to choose it for them. You know, I'm a good right. He won't let me hit him with my right. Yeah, well, he's doing his job. You need to do your job. Okay? Your job is to find a way to make him succumb to the thing that he does all of the time. Stop picking his poison.
Sir.
Yes,
sir. Yes, sir.
Tell you who.
Yes,
sir. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I say, you remember when we was kids and somebody get hit and they go to their parent, the parents say, and what did you do?
Yeah. What was you doing when all that was going on?
Yeah.
I still say that today. It ain't got no kids. I'll be like, okay. I'll be listening to his story. I'm like, well, get to the part where you tell me what you was doing.
Yes, sir.
Because I'm an empathizer. Oh, man, that's unfortunate. He did what? Man, that was unfortunate. Wow. Oh, wow, yeah. That is a pretty good knot size you got on your head. Wow, okay, we got something for that.
Oh.
Well, hold up, man. I didn't hear what you was doing. See, what happened was. Tayuku, you still with me?
Yambo family, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can, brother. Just want to let you give some final thoughts on this conversation tonight before we put it to rest.
As you guys were talking, I was thinking about, okay, what about the flip side of it? Why? How about you do the surprising, right? How about you do the setup, you know?
Yeah. Well, my teacher called that get off first, but I think that's another show. But as martial artists, and you know, you heard me say this many a times before as well, that that's a built-in chip. It's a flaw in us because we are programmed to, when my opponent does this, when my adversary does this, I'm going to do that.
When he does that, I'll do this. And if you see the way I preference that situation, I said, when? So I'm waiting. When is waiting for things to happen? It never talks about being proactive. Some people think that I'm rude as a martial artist when I say I'll spit in the guy's eye. Oh, that's okay. Oh, why would you do that? What happened to all your years of martial art? Well, that's how I got this far. I'm just saying. You know, and it's not to be just that. You know, I'll talk about biting somebody, spitting at them, breaking a finger, gouging an eye, you know, and it's But you forgot that I said that I'm practicing survival here. And so there's no third man in the ring. There's no bells, no whistles. There's no timeout. There's no stopping because of the screaming of the pain. And this is why, again, I refer back to Professor James' comment when he said we were taught to protect the things that we going to do. So my body structure, I'm not standing straight up. I'm what we call crown fighting. Crown fighting is try to put your chin like it's going to touch your chest and look straight ahead. You're going to find yourself looking up. You're not looking straight at somebody. You're looking up. So if that's the case, you're going to hit the crown of my head towards my forehead, not my bridge of my nose, which is just sticking up there waiting for you to hit or for you to break. So you drop your chin and then try looking straight ahead at somebody, you find yourself looking up. The other part about looking up is that you actually are sheltering your eyes because your eyelid is now letting your eye be fully open. All right? Your eye socket is now tilted at an angle, so when if I do try to punch you in the eye, the fist will slip directly off of the top of the skull. The frontal lobe of the skull is the hardest part of your skull. This is why headbutting is so popular in some self-defense things. I could do a lot of damage to the bridge of your nose with a headbutt. These are the sciences that we want to study and know long before the fight. So you slap me, boom, and I grab you and headbutt you, you're going to be blinking for a minute. That adds to my recovery time. See, I got to forget the fact that you slapped me or you got off a quick whatever, you know, or you sucker punched me because I was looking away or you did whatever. These things can happen. And then they happen. What's your response? And that's what we've been talking about here today. Hopefully we made a point without me having to say to anybody, do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. And there may be some people that have tuned me out because they like, you know, you know, and that stuff again, and that don't work, and this, that, and the other. I am, for the majority of the time, I'm quoting science. This is not stuff I'm making up. It's just stuff that I understand that works because it's mathematically sound to think of it this way. We bring it to the show to examine it. My show, much like my school, I refer to as being a laboratory. We simply experiment with things to come up with a better way. And sometimes the byproduct of those things turn into something a lot more productive than the thing that we call ourselves searching out. You know, how to look at now self-defense from the other end. That's kind of what we've been talking about here today. So I want to thank my guests. I want to ask y'all one question, if you can give me a quick answer. We got about maybe 8 more minutes to the show. I like to always put the element of children in my conversation about how and what do we tell children in the development of self-defense. So let's take this subject here. How do we prepare children for the you got hit, which a lot of them are going to get hit simply because the element of surprise, the bullying, and all the rest that has happened. And again, they've been taught not to hit first. They just got jacked. You got hit, slap, punch, push, choke. What are we talking about? Real quick, Tayuku, give me something.
I'm a grab my daughter and ask her what she should defend herself. That's what I'm going to do.
So would you say you grab your daughter and what?
I'm going to ask her to defend herself.
Okay.
And I'm going to see what she does.
Right. And correct from that point.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So let me just share this with you. When you grab and you see what she does and whatever she does, you can correct that because that's self-defense. What I would like for you to do is grab your daughter and take your two fingers and poke her in the ribs. And when she flinches and you see the how her body reacts, then I would ask you to do instructions from that point. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of what I'm asking you here. So when she cringes and she pulls her elbows into her gut and she goes into a crunch position like she got a sharp pain, I want you to tell her she should do that, but when that happens, to turn. And when she turns, the side of her fist is going to be the next to that person's temple, and that could be her reaction. See, so the self-defense part comes from when you poked her. Well, the poke will represent she got punched. Agree?
Yes.
Good. So that's kind of what I'm saying here. Not so much teaching the self-defense, but doing that. How about taking your nephew or your youngest son, Sha, and just take him, and with your palm heel, shove his head backwards to make his head tilt backwards. Okay? And then ask him, what would he do with that? Don't even ask him. Watch what happens to his feet. Watch what happens to his hands. What happens to everything when you shove his head backwards? And then try to show him how when his head is shoved back, that back beyond his head to assure his balance, and then move to the left or right from there. Agree, Sha?
Yes, sir. I'm going to do good. That, too.
But what I'm saying here is that now that shoving his head back is him getting punched in his face. But it's not so much the punch. You don't have to punch him, but you need to show him how his body, his skeleton will react when his head, which is heavier than it's 8 pounds, 6 to 8 pounds, when it's shoved back beyond his point of balance, how what it's going to make his rest of his body do before he can lower his sense of gravity. He has to get something beyond it to stabilize it, and then he can learn to weave or bob or go to the left or the right, and then teach him a technique from that. Head back, shift, hands out. Would that fair?
Yes, sir. Making notes.
And that's all I'm asking, gentlemen, is that we take some time, as we asked in this question, how much attention, if any, should we pay to teaching how to respond to a self-defense situation when you get hit? Because the operative word here is when you get hit. So you can mimic a hit to see what the body is going to do. Not so much there's no pain behind it, but there is a reaction. There's a nervous reaction. There's a leverage reaction. There's something that should happen. When they head go back, teach them the hands go up. You should teach them when they duck, hands go up. Head down, hands up. Head down, hands up, like a jumping jack. Why? Because a lot of times when you go duck, when you come back, you coming back with your head. That's like, I don't know, like an ostrich. You know, ostrich stick his head in the ground. Think it because his head in the ground. Nobody don't see that big body with all them feathers on it, you know. You don't want to come back and test the waters with your head. You want to bring your head up. Let him hit the hand. That's a good indicator there's something still going on up there, correct? Little things like that. I think if we're putting those kind of things in, again, what percentage of that you're going to put in your fight is up to you and your teaching. But always remind them that there's something there, because then they'll try to seek that thing out before you ask them the question. I know he's going to ask me, what about this, what about that? And they'll start doing it before you even ask them. And they'll start preparing their mind for what may happen as opposed to thinking that it will never happen. Because that surprise shock of your body getting hit like that is going to take you into a whole other loop. But it's like, what? No, nobody never told me about this. You know, we just got finished last practice of working with the medicine ball. Some of my students was like, yo, it's okay. You crazy, man.
You know, like this.
Because that wasn't a punch. That was just a medicine ball. But it was like, what in the world? But racing for impact is a beautiful thing. And then you know I had to drop it from the air, right, Hansi? You know that.
I seen you.
Yeah, drop it from the third floor. That's a frightening one, because you know you're looking at it coming and you try to brace for impact, and you know a couple of people pass wing, somebody probably desiccated. I don't know.
Oh, man.
But it brought back memories. It brought back memories. So
yeah.
Let's keep ourselves in that frame of mind, though.
Yes, sir. You know, we're talking about element of surprise. You know, I'm so I'm fond of watching the Animal Kingdom. But a lot of people, they look at the King Cobra. You know, the King Cobra raised their neck up to show you that he's big, or appeared to be bigger. Now, everybody knows that he has those teeth, man, that inject that poison. But a lot of people don't realize that he would rather spit the poison at you. They could spit long distance, and they generally spit it at the eyes. And that paralyzes it. That paralyzes the foe. And I'm like, wow, he don't have to bite you at all. He spit at you. And it just triggers something when you say, oh, it's okay, spit in a man's face. Why did he do that? That's nasty.
Yes, sir.
You wasn't expecting that, was you?
Yes, sir. But, you know, not you mentioning the King Cobra, and I'm just going to share this with you because we're running out of time here. My attribute to the King Cobra is that those two circles on the back of his hood appear to be eyes. So the King Cobra is watching his back. As bad as he is in the front, he learned to come up to the height of most predators, those the mongoose and them animals that can rev up and be taller than him. He knows not to stay on the ground. He revs himself up 2 feet in the air or 12 inches in the air to strike. He can spit from the ground. He can bite from the ground, but he don't. He's one of the few snakes that comes up to meet his predator eye to eye, but we're watching his back at the same time. You got to give him credit, man. You got to give a lot of credit the way he made this animal to be able to protect himself in an environment in the world that he lives in. And I think this is what we say when we teach in situation awareness, teaching you that you're not supposed to walk around like you don't know where you're at. You know, my teacher, beloved teacher, said, you walk around like you're lost, you may just get found. So you got to understand that you're not the one to allow yourself to fall into a trap. Forget what the predators may or may not do. How prepared are you in a situation awareness type thing? So we're not talking about doing no push-ups, no sit-ups and blocks and punches and getting on these sticks and karambits and all the rest of that good stuff. We're talking about preparing your mind to exist in the environment that you live in every single day. Don't do it. We just don't. We just tend to think that it ain't going to happen. It ain't happened yet. Didn't happen to my father. Didn't happen to my father's father. Yeah? Okay. Well, ain't neither one of y'all is in this jungle that you're in right now. Okay? And why wouldn't you teach, again, this is why I bring up the children, why wouldn't we teach our children what we know about surviving in this environment that we're living in? I'm just wondering. You know, it's a terrible thing that when knowledge is wasted, let's share it as much as we possibly can while we're on this plane. My condolences to my beloved brother, Hanshi Jack, who just lost his beloved mother. Condolences in order for him and the family. He was allowed to have his mother here on this plane with us for 105 years. 105 years.
Yes,
that got to make you smile. Yes, so understand that. Condolences in the order. If you know him, reach out and celebrate all the life that you possibly can. Until next time, may your good be better and may your better be blessed. Eye to eye.
Heart to heart.
Us.
Us.
A-I-O.
A-I-O. A-I-O.